I am from beyond. Listen, and all you desire will be yours. Welcome to Spider-Dan and the Secret Wars. Prepare for battle.
Welcome to Prattle World. I'm your host, the ever-amazing, ever-spectacular Spider-Dan. And in this podcast, I spotlight entertainment's best-kept secrets that a mainstream audience may find boring. And welcome to another edition of Secret Boar Stories, where I invite guests to count down a personal top five list in high-fidelity fashion. And have we got some stories for you today? We are going to delve into some alternate reality stories. Stories that should, would, coulda, shoulda, woulda, coulda been. Maybe not. Maybe they have. Maybe they haven't. Have they existed? Possibly not. But because the DC Warner Bros. Partnership have announced that their new line of films will be an Elseworlds type thing. So we're going to see from multiple takes on different characters, multiple Batmen, multiple Supermen, multiple Flashes, all at the same time, all part of a bigger, open, infinite Earths. All the possibilities are infinite, but all the possibilities are that much different. And again, I'm welcomed by the Don of DC, as we like to call him.
I do like DC.
You do like DC.
I do like DC. I'm a big DC fan.
You're a DC Don. It is, of course, Dennis Whittle.
Well, hello.
Hello.
Pop pickers.
Hello, pop pickers.
Hello, how are you?
He does this for charity.
I thought he pays me.
So well, in so many ways, so many different ways. I'm very good, Dennis. I'm glad that this has kind of come around, because I think this was something we planned a while ago, but I thought now of all time, after you introduced me and showed me the bits from the DC fandom, I thought this is the perfect time. We've got, you know, Ben Affleck as Batman, you've got a Michael Keaton coming back as Batman, you've got a Robert Pattinson as the Batman. You know, we've got all these different takes on these characters. I think I always thought DC should go this route with their movies.
Me too.
I always thought that this was them playing catch up with the Marvel Universe was a bad move.
I concur.
I get what they were doing, but I think it was like they were already like 8-9 movies behind by this point, I think, when they were trying to catch up. So I totally get why they want to catch up and they wanted to do a 2 Justice League movie and all this stuff. And we're still kind of getting that. We're still going to get still going to carry on, you know, Shazam, I think, still connected, Aquaman, yes. You know, the Flash is somewhat
Wonder
still
Woman.
Within that. Wonder Woman, yeah. So we still have that greater big kind of continuity, but we're also going to get more films like Joker and things like that, and Suicide Squad as well. That's all kind of within that same universe. So that's still, it's not going away.
No, but it leaves the door open to lots of different storytelling.
I do hope that they really get that idea and run and be brave with it, because I don't want to just see like slightly different Batman, slightly younger Batman. This Batman is more emo. This Batman was, you know, this one just likes to crochet, you know. You know, there's all these different, slightly different. I prefer, like, the books we're going to talk about. Yeah. I like when they really go whole hog and go, what can we do with these characters? How can we take them out of the comfort zone? You know, where can we place them? What can we do with them? The possibilities are endless. And I hope they don't play it too safe. I am a little bit worried that might happen.
I think they will. For the majority, I think they will kind of play, because they don't want to scare people.
No.
You know, if they suddenly come out and say, we're going to have, I don't know, a racist Batman.
Yeah.
They're going to go, oh, I don't think we should do that.
Yeah.
You know, they were scared of the fact that even the comics were going to have a black Batman and a black Superman for a while.
Yeah.
So I think...
Batman that uses guns.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think the animated universe would be the place to get these sort of books. I think that's what they'll do. I think they'll do, because they've already kind of announced they're going to do Elseworlds cartoons.
And they already have.
If that's popular, as Red Sun has been, I think that's what will happen. I think they'll move more into the movies. But, you know, the Joker proves that, you know, an R-rated, completely non-connecting movie
sells.
Works. People flock to it. You know, it won Oscars. It, yeah. You know,
I'm waiting for my Lex Luthor movie. That's what I'm waiting.
Yeah,
for.
Yeah.
I'm well up for that. Give me that.
Yeah. Because I'm waiting for Ace the Bat Hound. Movie.
Ace the Bat Hound spin-off. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where he gets rabies.
Yeah. Yeah.
He gets rabies, and then another darker, more grimmer Ace the Bat Hound replaces him. He's got razor claws. And
I was
stuff.
Just going to have him just eating the Bat Family.
Just like a dog, yeah, like a ravenous dog.
Yeah, yeah, and turn them into the kind of like...
zombies.
Yeah, eats Comet, the super horse, and, you know...
Yes.
manhandles Crypto.
The horse that fell in love with Supergirl, but then couldn't turn back into a man, even though he was a man. Weird.
You're going to love 50s DC.
Yeah.
You're going to love it, you know.
Well, I wanted to talk about kind of early DC, because they did kind of... Back in the day, DC experimented with these like imaginary stories,
yes,
and things like that back in the day, like what if stories, which these are, and Marvel has a series that is called What If, yep, and stuff. So they were like these imaginary stories. They were a bit like, you know, let's play out this idea, but then it's all a dream, it's all a vision, it's all, you know, whatever it is. And it's like you still have the established continuity, yeah, nothing's changed, but you've had a little bit of fun. You've had a fun like diversion, or, you know, it's Batmite playing around, or Mixes Mitpitlick. I can't even say it today.
You did better than me.
Yeah. Mr. Mixes Pitlick, I'm going to go with.
But
that's what I'll go with.
You know, back when they did this stuff, they had to keep continuity. They had to keep... So they did have Batman's son. They did have Superman's son. Mm. They had Batman Mark II. You know, they had him fighting all kinds of creatures. They also had him as a vampire.
Yeah, as well, yeah.
A couple of times.
Supergirl as a werewolf.
Supergirl as a werewolf, yeah. So they did mess around with stuff.
Yeah. But it wasn't until... Gotham by Gaslight, obviously quite a famous Elseworlds story, yeah, there was potential, but they didn't go all the way with it. Like, obviously, it was like, I was talking about a Twilight film not so long ago, and I was like saying that the ending is a bit of a cop-out because it's all a vision in the end, the big battle, and it kind of takes it away. So in some respects, it's like that, or like Dallas did when it was like, oh, he's still alive.
I've had a shower.
Yeah, I've had a shower.
Everything's great.
I've washed all the bad seasons away. None of that happened, sort of thing. But I think with this, they go, right, let's mess about with the idea, the main core ideas of the character, or keep the beginnings of it, but let's just play around with like the setting, or, you know, different elements of the classic characters and their world and their universes. I think that didn't really happen until, I think, is it the late 80s, early 90s?
90s.
90s.
Yeah.
Now, and they started, technically, Gotham by Gaslight wasn't initially an Elseworlds tale, no, because the branding only came after the success of Gotham by Gaslight.
I think
Gaslight.
They did three books similar, but no branding on it.
Yeah.
And then the popularity, and then the other branding.
Exactly. Like, and we're not going to, just to be clear, we're not going to focus on all alternate reality tales or parallel timelines that DC have, because we'd be here all week, and this would be a lot for us to research and read. And me and Dennis have gone away and read a lot. There's some massive Elseworlds collections you can get. Really recommend them. Some great premises in there, even if the stories aren't great. There's something for everybody,
yeah, very much so.
I think, with the Superman, Justice League. And again, there's a lot digitally, and you can get it physically as well, depending on what you're after. But we're looking specifically at the books with the Elseworld branding, so the specific imprint where it has the Elseworld. If it doesn't have the Elseworlds logo on the book, or it didn't have it at one point, or it does have it, like if it was there at one point, we are looking at those specific books. So for example, let's pull one out of the hat. What isn't an Elseworlds alternate reality that we could pick from? Batman Beyond, for example. That's not Elseworlds.
No,
technically,
no.
It is an alternate reality, or you know, say. The Crime Syndicate Earth, where all the Justice League are evil. They're not technically under this Elseworlds imprint. So
they're,
we're not going to look at those. But we are going to talk top five actual Elseworlds stories. So I think we should get going.
Okay.
Now, before we get going, though, all the Elseworlds imprint books came with a little blurb at the start, which I'd like to read out to you, Dennis. So here we go. It's a lovely, sexy blurb. Here we are. In Elseworlds, heroes are taken from their usual settings and put into strange times and places. Some that have existed or might have existed, and others that can't, couldn't, or shouldn't exist. The result, stories that make characters who are as familiar as yesterday seem as fresh as tomorrow.
I do like that. I think it sums up Elseworlds perfectly. I think it's a good blurb. I think it laid it down line. This is what you're going to get.
Because there'll probably be a lot of people that buy a comic, and if this is their first comic, they might be expecting their standard Batman, the standard Superman, Wonder Woman. And that blurb tells you to subvert those expectations, to look at it differently and to go, actually, this might not be what I think it's going to be. And I think a lot of these Elseworlds books you come into and you expect them to go a certain way and they don't always go there. And there's always something surprising about them.
I also think they're quite dark as well. A lot of them are very dark.
Yeah.
Which we'll get into with some of our choices.
Oh, yeah.
As always, we've not gone for like the mega... There's one or two really, really famous popular ones.
Yeah, yeah.
And we've kind of stayed away from them because we know everyone's read them or know about them.
Yeah.
So we've kind of looked at some of the...
The lesser known ones.
Yeah.
Underrated. Yeah. Slightly more obscure.
And as always,
which is what this podcast is all about.
And we do kind of tend to lean towards the dark side of life.
We do. Especially in these times, Dennis, in
these
happy-go-lucky times we live in.
We do like to bring happiness and joy wherever we go.
That's right. So I'm going to spread the darkness of the DC universe. Hey, you know, Marvel does have its dark moments, but I do think that DC does it in a different light. But I think we should get going.
We should.
Because we have talked long enough about this. Like, people want to know, especially what you think and what I think. Well, maybe they do. Who knows who'll listen? If anyone will listen at all. So, Dennis, tell us your first pick for your top five DC Elseworlds comics.
It will be Batman Houdini.
Batman Houdini.
Yes.
The Devil's Workshop.
The Devil's Workshop, yes.
So tell us about that and the premise of that book.
It's a new book for me. I've owned it a while, never read it, because I thought the premise was only crap. Dan read it. So it was really good. Told me to read it. And I went, all right then. And it's really, really good. Basically, you have Batman Houdini. Batman's kind of been his usual trying to hide from himself.
Yeah.
You've got Houdini being the showman.
So it's set around the kind of turn of the century. I think it's like 1907 or something like that.
It's very, very early on, isn't it? There's crimes happening with Joker-like...
It's Mr. Scheidenfreude.
Mr. Scheidenfreude.
Which I thought was a clever name.
Doing some dastardly deeds. I'm going to say with children, that sounds awful, but he's...
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, he yeah. Is, isn't he? Yeah. And you've got people are know about the bat. They're afraid of the bat. And you've got Houdini who thinks, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
It's not. It's all smoke and mirrors. I know about smoke and mirrors. That's what the bat is. And through the kind of investigation into what's happening with these children, Batman and Houdini's paths cross. And they kind of complement each other. They kind of team up to go and find what's happening with these children. Mm. That's the premise, that's about right?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much the premise.
There's all the little side things going on and stuff.
Yeah, a lot of side plots. Plot A, plot B.
Yeah, I'm trying not to kind of go in too much of the deal because I want people to read them. So I'm going to try to summarize and not spend loads of time talking about them. I'm going to give you little bits, my favorite bits.
Bit of tease.
And then I want you to go, like, similar to what you did to get me to read this book.
Yeah.
You know, was enough for me to go and read it. And that's what I'm going to try to do.
Yeah.
Because there are certain bits in the book which are really, really good. Mm. And there's bits in the book which are so dark.
I'm assuming most people know who Harry Houdini was.
Yeah.
You know, he was an escapologist, you know. And, like, there's a lot of stuff that, like, Batman does. Like,
Sarah called him an anthropologist.
An anthropologist. Not quite, Sarah, not quite. Nice, though. Good. Good try. Good attempt. Good start.
Add the word apologist.
Yeah, it's got the apologist. They've got the apology in. Apologies to Sarah. No, apologies to us. He's obviously very famous for, you know, if you've seen stuff like The Prestige, it's kind of like that. He's part magician, part, you know, he disproves a lot of myths. He's like a myth buster as well, but he also goes, you know, there's always scientific reasoning behind this. There's no superstition. There's no myths, supernatural. You know, it's just a guy. It is just a guy. And slowly but surely, he can sees through the facade of Bruce Wayne, the facade of the Bat.
Yep.
Links the two together. I don't think that's really a spoiler for it.
No, and there is a. I'm going to say there's a really nice moment where the talking, and he says, you know, you got to really work on your voice. and Bruce's like, what do you mean? What do you mean? He goes, come on. And he gets his cape and he does like a bat. Yeah. He's like, okay, I do need to work on my voice.
Yeah. Houdini's quite funny in it as well. Yeah, like, he's charming.
And it's very accurate about the sort of stuff he's doing. Like there's the asking people to go around and punch him in the stomach and stuff because he can do it. Asks Bruce Wayne to go on. And he's like, oh, I can't do that. You know, I could never possibly throw a punch. So it's got a lot of these elements in it, and there is the escape parts in it as which is needed. It's beautifully painted.
Oh, gorgeous painted book.
It's watercolors, it's kind of flows. It's kind of got this whimsical kind of horror, gothic feel to the whole book.
Yeah.
And Batman looks like he does in every turn of the century book.
Yeah, so it's very much, he's got the kind of the Gotham by Gaslight overcoat.
Yeah, jacket,
type thing.
Big eyes cut out.
Big belt.
No one can see that, can they, when I do that with my finger?
No one can see you doing the round the circles around your eyes, no. But I know what you mean, Dennis.
Thank you.
I know. It's not like the classic white eye, it's more like the...
It's been cut out by scissors.
Yeah, you can see it's big kind of ski mask type mask. Yeah, with pointed ears. But yeah, it is really fantastic. It's a fun adventure. It is fun, but it's very dark and disturbing in kind of themes and subject matter. But there are twists and turns, and again, don't want to spoil those. But like, it surprised me because I didn't think, I was like, Batman and Houdini.
I was exactly the same. I've had the book for years and never read it.
And like, why would I want to mix reality with my comics? It's like, I'm never going to read that Eminem Punisher crossover. So why should I read that?
Why would you never read the...
Because I just don't want to do that to myself. I like Eminem. I like the Punisher, but never the twain shall meet.
It's a bit weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a little weird. I know he came out of rehab, and that was the first thing he got back into. That was his new drug, was comics.
Yeah.
And obviously Marvel were like, yeah.
I can relate.
Promotion, yeah. Give me a new comic. And then that's what came of it. But I'm just never been interested. And I've even got the app, the Marvel Unlimited app, and I could read it with effectively for free, you know, with the standard thing. But it doesn't interest me.
But I think Houdini, he's almost a mythical character.
Yes.
There's so many legends around what he did or what he didn't do. You know, there's lots of things around, you know, the trickster side of him.
Yeah.
You know, people thought, oh, he's amazing. No, he kind of... And he says that very early on, smoke and mirrors. The bat is smoke and mirrors.
Yeah.
He's just a man.
Yeah.
And there's he's a paranormal. No, he's just a man. I will prove who he is.
And they go, there's a bit where they go to a seance as well.
Yeah.
And they kind of fall for this seance. And they're like, how do they know details about my mother? My mother called me this name and things like that. And even Houdini for a moment is like, I don't know how to prove that that's fake. How did they know that information? I've never told anybody that. How, you know, and Bruce Wayne's the same. But what I like about a good team-up book is it's how different the characters are, but yet how similar they are.
Yes.
You know, like a good Superman-Batman team-up, like a World's Finest team-up does that. And I think that this book does that fine.
He also takes the piss out of Batman. Yeah.
There's a lot of humour there. Yeah. It's a fun read, and again it's a breeze to read. I probably read it in half an hour.
It's just
you just go through it, and I'm like, yeah, this is great. And again, it's not a book, because I was going through all the Elseworlds collections one by one, so it was kind of like, I was like, I'll read this, but I'm not like looking forward to it. I don't think the premise is that good, because I think some of these books are the premise is better necessarily than the story. Again, different writers would tell that premise in a different way, and some have done similar premises or the same premise again, but yeah, excellent choice, Dennis. Excellent choice.
And thank you for recommending it.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm glad you enjoyed it as much as I did. So
excellent
choice.
I almost texted you at 4 in the morning. Ooh. Saying it's great.
Oh, was it that late? I probably would have answered. I've not got much on. I'm going to be honest with you, Dennis. So a lot of people say that Gotham by Gaslight is their favourite. Batman Elseworlds, that's the one they read. That's the one that's their favourite. I personally saw the animated film before I read it. I really enjoyed the animated film, but the book itself, I found a bit disappointing, I'll be honest.
Fair enough, yeah.
I've got... the artwork is fine. Love the artwork. Mike Mignola, top of his game, you know, before he does all the weird long necks and everything. but I knew for a sec... I knew from the second it began who Jack the Ripper was. Like, I didn't even... And I hadn't... There had been no spoilers for me. No one had spoilt it. But I knew the second I saw a character, I went, it's them. That's Jack the Ripper. So all the while, it is a good mystery story, but I knew it was coming. And even the clues and the things, you know, and the framing of Bruce Wayne, just it just wasn't interesting. It was better done in that film. I think that film combined that with kind of Master of the Future, which is the sequel to it, which again, not so great either, in my opinion. But don't worry, Dennis, because if I've learned anything about these Elseworlds stories, there's a few things. Lot of cruelty towards children.
There are.
Lot of death of superheroes.
Yes.
Lots of stories at the turn of the century. And a lot of them feature Jack the Ripper.
Indeed.
So I'm going to include Wonder Woman, Amazonia. So this is Victorian England. Wonder Woman has been brought over from Paradise Island by Steve Trevor. However, in this society, it's horrifically misogynistic. Women walk around attached to their husbands. They are chained. They are shackled. They're bound. They have to go along with whatever their husband says. They are in command. The whole society is geared towards, misogyny and the power of men, having control over women, dominance over women.
I need to read this book.
It's absolutely fantastic. And Wonder Woman is brought over from Paradise Island. Steve Trevor, like the standard story, Steve Trevor arrives Paradise Island. If you've seen the film or if you know the origin of Wonder Woman, Steve Trevor arrives on Paradise Island, but he manipulates the Amazons and he learns all about their culture, all their powers and everything. And, you know, he's this English colonialist, you know, so he contacts England. And basically they invade, destroy Paradise Island, enslave some of the Amazons, kill some of them off, take all their treasures and everything. And Wonder Woman somehow ends up there and is taken by Steve Trevor, who forces her into a marriage, a loveless marriage. They have several children. There's lots of scenes about Steve Trevor kind of forcing her into sexual acts and things she doesn't want to do. And it's very clear in the book that this is not good. This is not nice. This is not consensual. And what he does is he takes Diana and puts her in these kind of vaudeville shows where she showcases her strength. She's holding these lions, fighting a boa constrictor snake, all this sort of stuff. But in one of the shows, someone tries to assassinate the king's son and the king. And Wonder Woman leaps into action, as she should, as she usually would in her own main universe, and saves the king and his son. And they're invited to the palace to have a party and everything. And during this time, in the gap between this and the party, we see Wonder Woman is slowly but surely, secretly, helping women in dangerous situations where they're accosted by men, or there's a murder, there's, you know, robberies, all sorts of stuff. People being mistreated, abused. Etta Candy turns up as a prostitute that Wonder Woman used to know on the streets. She's like one of these street urchins, and she takes her in, and she's now the nanny to her children. You know, helps her. There's a disabled member of the former kind of royalty that's still around, and she, you know, treats him so nice. She treats everybody lovely, even though these are some horrific men and the treatment of her is awful. But all the while she's secretly protecting these women, there's this kind of secret subculture of women comes to the fore, and it's almost like the suffrage movement. And again, there's the symbolic breaking of those bonds and those chains. There's women using a code word, they're like Amazonia, and all the women know what that means, and they even dress like Wonder Woman. They you know, they have the gear, the stars, the bird logo, you know, all this sort of stuff. And we learn as well within the story that the king is actually Jack the Ripper, and he has manipulated his way into being the king of England and running the country as he sees fit. And he sees women, as we know, pieces of meat to be gutted and sluts and whores, as Jack the Ripper would describe them. And he's leading this charge, and he manages to what he calls distill masculinity, and he gives them these almost like venom steroid, and they all get like massive and strong. But of course, Diana is there to kind of save the day. Again, I don't want to spoil it too much, but that is basically the crux of the story.
Sounds great.
And that's why I felt it was such kind of it's a universal story.
Yeah, yeah.
It's by William Messner Loebs, who had a big run on the character, and another artist, who I forget the name. But it's just great. And the real shame about these early Elseworlds books is there's not enough Wonder Woman-led books.
Yeah, yeah.
It's mainly Batman, mainly Superman, some Justice League. You know, a couple of Green Lantern and some other stuff, but that's the best Wonder Woman one there is. It's absolutely fantastic. Old, kind of old school art. It's Phil Winslade, I think. Winsdale, maybe. But just utter gorgeous book. Great message. Female empowerment. What Wonder Woman's all about. And it kind of, she makes, in the end, not to spoil it, but she, England is improved for the better. The world is improved for the better because she's brought about change and equality to Victorian England.
Sounds great.
Yeah, loved it. Loved it.
Sounds really good. I've got to follow that. I don't think I can.
No. Well, you're going to have to with your next choice. What's your number four?
Superman, Cal.
Ooh, Cal.
You'll see from my there is a theme.
Okay.
With mine, this is probably the one that kind of stays out of the theme a little bit. But what you find again with a lot of the kind of Elseworlds books, especially the Superman one, there's massive nature. Nurture debate with Superman.
Mm, yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter where he lands, what he does, will he be a Superman? Or will he do?
Will he be what we expect him to be?
Yeah, will he be the Gen of Hope?
Mm.
Now this one, he lands in King Arthur's kind of Camelot-y before kind of that.
It's like
Dark Ages.
Yeah, I guess medieval times.
And he's kind of brought up his simple life. Artwork's beautiful.
He's a farmer.
Blacksmith. The artwork's great. I keep seeing the artwork.
Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, who is the classic DC artist, if you know.
And you've got kind of the tale of a guy falling in love. It's a love story, isn't it? Yeah, at the core of it is a love story. You have
the knight has to win over the fair maiden. Standard.
There's games in it where people are showing their strengths and stuff, and
jousting and archery. Yeah. And
the ship has been fallen in the hands of Lex Luthor. Isn't it? He's kind of like in charge, but he happens to have a lovely bit of chain on with a big chunk of kryptonite on it. Which they can't figure out why every time he goes near Cal, he's not Superman, he's not Clark, he's Cal.
Yeah,
he kind of gets weak because he wins the competition. He does all this stuff. He asks to marry Lois, which pisses Luthor off a lot. Kind of goes into a little dark. But in a minute.
Yeah, it gets very dark.
Yeah, it is Superman. He is hope. He's a nice guy trying to do the right thing for the right people. Nice. Peasant type stuff.
I do like that he's given to, like, he arrives on the farm and they're very much like, hello there, what's going on? You know, very simple local kind of serfs. You know, it's very much kind of like, there's a lot of like Monty Python-esque humour in those little scenes.
Dave Gibbons. So you have Lex making an armour out of his ship, which is like...
Yeah, it's like the strongest metal and stuff. And Cal's the only one who can make it because he's got abilities. And he can manipulate the metal in a certain way.
A little bit, which kind of pushes Cal to kind of lose his temper.
Yeah.
And it's... I'm going to have to tell you because it's a pinnacle. But Lex rapes and beats Lois to death.
Yeah.
And it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's one of those like Fridge and the Woman type stuff, I think.
It does kind of come out of nowhere a little bit.
And it does move the story on, which is a big thing about it. But you also see the guard in the room and they're like looking at each other sweating and like, this is wrong.
Because they can hear it in the other books happening.
He's calling her names and there's blood and there's all kinds of disgusting stuff. And he opens the door and just get rid of the body.
Yeah.
Just a piece of meat.
Yeah, exactly. So, she means nothing to me.
Yeah, this... Obviously, Cal finds out, loses his temper a little bit, and then goes after Lex.
Yeah, and it leads kind of an uprising
because
they love Cal as well. They do. And there's no kind of secret identity stuff, which is nice. No. It's just like he is. You know, you don't have to worry about him being like I'm Clark Kent.
The peasants know his power. People know what he is about and stuff.
They know he's strong. They know he can do stuff.
They literally cover him in molten steel. He literally becomes the Man of Steel.
Yeah,
which is. And amazing, it's so clever, good.
Such a good book.
But it's the ending for me what I like because I'm gonna have to ruin the ending because I think it needs to. There's a battle at the end, a bit of a fight between him and Lex, and in this battle they kind of kill each other. And then there's a little kind of epilogue.
Epilogue, yeah.
Yeah, it talks about and he inspires people and plus he also makes. Well, I think it's Excalibur, really.
I think it's Jimmy Olsen is telling the story to a young boy. And it's like he's left the sword in the anvil, yeah, in his blacksmith anvil.
You call it Merlin, don't they?
Yeah, he goes, maybe you'll become as great a man as he was, yeah, Merlin. And then you see the sword in the stone. It's got the famous symbol.
And it's like symbol. So Superman, again, inspires people to be the best they can be.
And kind of inspires his own Justice League.
So even in his death, he's still inspired people. Stories still told about the time that Cal did that and the other. Mm. And again, it's, as me, anyone who's ever listened to this knows, I am such a Superman fanboy. It's ridiculous.
It's good to see that you can transfer that character into something as different, because he's the man of tomorrow.
Yes.
It's good to see him as a man of the past.
Yeah.
In a way. I really enjoyed that book, and one of my favorites, almost made my list as well, much like Batman Houdini.
Yeah. It's short as well. It's not many pages. It kind of flies through. Mm. It's very paced well, but the artwork is beautiful. Mm. You know, it's just so Superman. There's like, he's got long hair in it, and the bit after he gets covered in the metal, it kind of comes off him, and he's like, oh, look at him. Yeah. Long hair.
He's gorgeous.
Oh, he's beautiful.
He is a beautiful. He's beautiful. As beautiful and as nude as Superman probably ever has been.
He is naked.
Most of the finale.
He is nude.
Yeah.
But no, it's a good story. It's a good morality tale. It shows how one person's actions can galvanize people and ease hope. He stands for hope.
It's almost a bit like, you know, because a lot of people say like Superman is very much, you know, the last son of Krypton. He's Smallville Clark Kent. And then he's also, you know, Metropolis Clark Kent, you know. I feel like it's more like the Smallville Clark Kent and more the kind of sort of last son of Krypton. But I think it is that more kind of local, homebred, farm boy, simple things. Things are right, things are wrong. If they're wrong, they need to be sorted out. It's simple as that.
Yeah.
And I think that comes a lot through in this book.
Very much so, yeah.
And I think that's why I enjoyed it. It was very...
And he doesn't even try to be the kind of people to look up to. No. He just naturally, because again, he does the right thing.
Again.
If something needs to be fixed, he will fix it because it's the right thing to do.
Exactly.
And he's not even trying to do it. It just, that's who he is. And I think
it's kind of a natural trajectory for him.
I think a lot of times in the Elseworld books, and then I've got another Superman one coming up.
You like Superman? Oh, what a surprise. Who knew? You know, who would know?
I do like a bit of the old soups, and it is the nature nurture. Will he become hope and stuff? In this one, he doesn't even try. He just naturally, because he does the right thing.
Yeah,
we all need charisma. A bit of Superman. Yeah. We all need to be a bit of Superman.
Absolutely. And again, even given the dark aspects of the story, it's still, I think, one of the more kind of hopeful.
Yeah, and it goes against, even when he loses his shit, basically, which is un-Superman-like.
Hmm.
The story is still told that what he did was the right thing,
exactly.
The honor of the woman, kind of stuff.
Exactly. So. It's not like anything is like manipulated. It's very, it's a very straightforward story.
It is,
But that's, I think, that's its strength, and that's the core of its strength. And
I agree.
And again, Superman is a very straightforward, simple character within this story, and it works.
And again, a lot of the Elseworlds, they are simple stories.
Yeah,
they're not. There's very few of them which are massive books. That probably comic length, a lot of them.
50 to 60 pages.
Yeah, they're not massive.
And even then, sometimes they're broken into two. If they're over 50 or 60 pages, they'll be broken into two issues, depending on what's going on. But excellent choice, Dennis.
Well, thank
and again,
you, sir.
Another one that almost made my list. So great stuff.
Thank you.
All right, I'm going to go with my number four. So this might be one people have heard of quite a bit. It is Justice League of America, The Nail. So this story is inspired by a verse by George Herbert. I'm going to read it here. So, not unlike Cal, I think this kind of segues quite well into it. For want of a nail, the shoe was lost. For want of a shoe, the horse was lost. For want of a horse, the knight was lost. For want of a knight, the battle was lost. So it was a kingdom lost, all for the want of a nail. So this is, again, another great kind of Superman story. However, this is a story which is the absence of Superman, a world without Superman, which we've had before, and it's never usually a good thing. So basically, the Kents, about to do their regular drive, you know, in all these universes, driving along, ship comes down, they adopt Clark as their own child, this last son of Krypton, and they raise him to be Superman. They get a nail in their tire. They don't have a spare. They can't go out. They can't pick up their stuff. So they stay in. They miss this event. So they never adopt Superman. So the Kents, who are an integral part of the Superman story, never meet that child. So the world carries on. Modern day, Metropolis has come up with their own way of handling superhuman threats. Some say they're a bit overzealous, a bit too guarded. But again, they have been attacked by several supervillain threats. They don't have a homegrown superhero of their own. It's not something that they have. And for the lack of Superman, the world has become a much darker place. There is mass manipulation of the media for political power, for the amassing of political power. There are scapegoats made of certain groups of people. Not unlike real life, Dennis. Mm,
indeed.
And Luther has never been as Trumpian as he is in this.
He is. I read this book again because it was recommended by you. And it's just great. It is so, so good. It's so good.
So this is by Alan Davis, written by Alan Davis, drawn by Alan Davis. I did get the chance to meet Alan Davis. He was a little bit grumpy, but just a touch.
Just a tad.
But I still appreciate his work. I got a nice sketch from him, so it's all good. But this is a fantastic read, and it is a love letter to the Silver Age of comic books. The way when he grew up and he was reading all these kind of weird and wacky characters and the main characters. But yeah, it is quite a disturbing, and there's a lot of the kind of Red Scare in there, and the kind of, you know, un-American activities sort of stuff, and, you know, the Joseph McCarthy, you know, and all that sort of stuff that was going on in the 50s, late 50s. And it comes through, and it's weird to see that they have such, because they have a hatred for aliens specifically. They think all the superheroes are aliens. They think that there's some conspiracy that they're going to be replaced, or they're going to take over. They're going to have some sort of invasion plan. But that's not the case, and they're constantly trying to prove that they're not. And they're, you know, the Justice League hire Lois Lane. Now the Justice League is totally different as well. There was an accident early on which led to the crippling and kind of mental incapacitation of the Green Arrow, the death of Hawkman, and again it led to a lot of deaths as well, and they're still blamed for this event.
Yeah, Green Arrow has become a soundbox for the media, hasn't he?
Exactly.
They kind of wheel him on to kind of shout, and there's a bit where it's, but someone else, you know, I lost my husband, I lost Hawkman through this, and no one even said anything about that.
No, because he's an alien.
Yeah. Exactly,
because they don't care.
Yeah.
And again, if you, for example, During Trump's election year, if you look at this book and you just put illegal in front of every time they mention an alien, you'll see what I mean. There is this witch hunt that is being perpetrated, and there's a conspiracy against these heroes that is being done by some, you know, shadowy, unforeseen person or group. Like, there's all these kind of supervillains that have disappeared, or they're coming, you know, out of the woodwork, but they're doing something else that would be against what they normally would do. Even heroes are reprogrammed and they're put into these re-education kind of camps and mind warped, and they're trying to kind of create kind of their own superhuman army to kind of control. That's the ironic thing, is that they're trying to shut down all the superheroes, but they're just trying to drill in all the power, and then they're absorbing their abilities, they're trying to use their abilities on their own soldiers, things like that, and they've got all the technology, and it's scary, and it's you know, and the Justice League, and the glue that holds them together, which would be Superman, is not there.
No.
So they're constantly butting heads more than usual. They're like, Batman's like, I'm a shadowy creature of the night. Nobody should know about me. I don't care about this. But they're like, we should be, you know, going out to the people and showing them who we are and bearing our souls. And Batman's like, no, I need criminals to be afraid of me. And then, you know, and Green Lantern, you know, like, everyone just basically splits off. Everyone, like, Diana goes to speak to politicians and tries to kind of keep doing that. And but then she also thinks she's being a political tool, and she's been used and maneuvered and manipulated. You know, Green Lantern is the biggest and most powerful hero they have, next to like John Jones, who's obviously has to back off a little bit because he's quite clearly an alien. His name is Martian Manhunter.
Yes.
So he has to take, and again, Hawk Girl has to kind of take a step back as well, because anything she does is kind of perceived as being some sort of agenda there. But it's absolutely fantastic. And you get to see all these kind of cool, lesser known characters like the Metal Men turn up.
It's literally, you turn a page. I was turning a page.
Yeah.
Crap, they've got them in it.
Yeah.
Why are they? And it's all the kind of origin costumes as well.
Yeah. You know, Silver Age.
Yeah, they've not modernised it, which is really good.
Yeah, it's nice.
You know, to see like the Outsiders, as the Outsiders were.
And there's like, it's great to see like the New Gods are in there for a little bit, Darkseid, you know, the Green Lantern Corps are there.
Spectre, all the mystical characters.
And there's this big force field around the Earth, so no one can contact anybody else. You know, they can't ask for help. You know, they have to deal with it on their own. They're kind of, you know, and there's the less and less, as it goes on, there's less and less resources. And weirdly enough, this is probably one of the darker universes for Batman. Like, who would think that the lack of Superman would make his world that much darker and depressing?
Shows how them two are kind of so integral together.
And they feed off one another, you know,
Superman's, light in the dark.
Yeah, exactly. Superman's not as naive when he's around, and Batman isn't as dark and brooding, perhaps, when he's around and things like that. But yeah, bloody hell, there's some stuff that happens in this book. And the sequel, there's a sequel called Another Nail, which I also recommend, but it is not quite as good. But it's a fantastic read. I really, really recommend it. I think it's one of the better Elseworlds. There's a few twists and turns, so I don't want to spoil it too much. But I think the real world kind of themes like are as relevant today as they've ever been, probably more so, you know, with things like the Black Lives Matter movement, things like that happening right now. I think it's never been as effective an allegory or, you know, metaphor as there has ever been. Amazing story. You love it. I love it.
I think it's great. I think it's brilliant.
I love that we're on the same wavelength with a lot of these books.
I think it's absolutely amazing. It's
a fantastic, fantastic read. Check out that. You can get a collection with both miniseries in. There's two miniseries.
You can have the Eagle Moss also release some of the hardbacks, you know, in the collection.
Yes, that
as well, so you can pick them up really cheap.
Very easily done. So go ahead, read that. Most of these are available digitally as well on Comixology or Kindle, so you can buy them that way. Whichever way you want to read them, just read them.
I agree. Yeah.
That's what I'd say. Right, what about your number three, Dennis?
My number three, I'm not going to go into too much detail about.
Okay.
Because I think I'd ruin it.
Yeah.
And it's the second Elseworlds book I ever read.
Okay.
Castle of the Bat.
Ooh, good choice.
Because there's so much that goes on in the book, I feel if I start talking about it, I will ruin it for people.
Mm. Yeah, I think so.
And it is basically a Frankenstein story.
Okay.
I think I can say much as that.
Yeah.
There are experiments, you know, the kind of Victor Frankenstein's character is now Wayne.
Yes.
I'm not saying which one.
Yeah.
There is Alfred.
Yes. What a great... That's a great... Right, yeah. So if you know the Frankenstein story, I think you know where this is kind of heading. Well,
there's a little kind of twist on energy, how they produce energy and kind of what happens.
Life energy.
And moves on, which is kind of a bit more like the Dracula kind of Renfield, you know, I eat this and that.
Yeah. There's a little bit of like Dr. Moreau in there, I think.
Bit. Yeah. It's painted. It's a painted book.
Yeah. Gorgeous book.
Beautiful book. There's a couple of splash pages which are just awesome.
Yeah.
Just really, really nice.
Gorgeous.
And it's one of my favorite books. Mm. I read it again today just to remind myself how good it was.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about it too much. Is that a cop out?
No, it's not a cop out.
I want people to pick it up and go, ooh. Yeah.
But just all you need to know is Frankenstein as Batman.
Yes.
Effectively. Yeah, that's all you need
to know.
You get
that from the cover. Yeah. He's there with the bolts.
Yeah,
the
cover's there and the electricity's going through. Yeah. And again, there's a lot... And it's not... The story is... Obviously, it's based on that and inspired by that. And you can see that... But there's a lot of fun little elements and changes and alterations to like the origin of Batman and, you know, how it develops and how it ends. I didn't really necessarily see coming either.
Yeah.
And some of the other elements I didn't see. There's a part with a dog, which I won't ruin.
Wait
to see the Bat Hound. It's great. But there's a lot of development and it's great. It's a unique spin on
it. It is a Frank. There is body parts, there is grave digging, yeah. there is everything you want from a gothic tale.
Absolutely.
And I think that...
And it's told in a gothic form, like it looks gothic.
The painted covers, everything's just... It's almost like it's painted with a mist across it. Mm. It's got like swamp mist and mountain mist and on every page. It's and the kind of laboratory is just like, oh my God, it's like it steps out of James Whale's kind of...
I wouldn't be surprised if they use the films as kind of inspiration.
Yeah, but a reference.
And as point of reference, because it does look like that. And
it's amazing.
Believe. And again, there's kind of like this conspiracy as well within it. You know, you've got other elements of other stories to make it, you know, just kind of jazz up the story, spice up the story.
It is kind of a trope of the Elseworlds. Mm. They're not always straightforward.
No.
Castle of the Bat, Frankenstein story. Yeah, but
yeah,
it's
exactly.
A little bit left field. Look around this corner here, and that's why I don't want to go into too much detail about it. I'm just going to say, read it, go and buy it.
Yeah.
Go and look at it. Go and download it. Whatever you need to. Go. It's a beautiful, beautiful book.
Yet again, another one that's so very just missed out on being in my top five.
And yeah, like I said, you can kind of see a theme in mine. I'm a big, as everyone knows, I'm a big fan of Universal Horror. I'm a big fan of kind of like all that kind of turn of the century kind of horror and Caligari and all that kind of stuff and
the classics,
the Hammer
stuff.
Classics,
yeah.
So most of my picks are kind of that ilk.
Yeah.
This is very, very, and my next one is very much. Universal monster territory. Very much kind of gothic storytelling and it's beautiful. So there you go.
Fantastic. Well, I highly recommend that one as well. Again, great choice. Yeah, so I'll move on to mine. I kind of don't want to talk about this one too much, actually. A lot of people, Dennis, they have complaints about Superman.
They do.
They have issues with Superman. He's too nice. He's too hokey. He's too cheesy. He's got too many powers. He's unrelatable. All this sort of stuff. He needs to be more like Batman, is what I hear a lot
of.
Oh,
yes.
I wonder
what your next choice is.
Yes, he needs to be more like Batman. Batman's more popular. He's more interesting. He's got greater villains. Okay, here we go. Superman speeding bullets. The rocket, Kal-El's rocket, crashes down at Wayne Manor. They are found by the way. He's found by the Waynes and adopted and named Bruce Wayne. Years go by. He's raised, you know, in somewhat secrecy. You know, he's told to hide his powers, what have you. And they go out and they go and see. They go to the theatre. They go to the cinema and they see Mask of Zorro, whatever it is. You know, and Bruce, quote unquote Bruce, enjoying himself. And they go into Crime Alley. And we all know what happens in Crime Alley. We're all familiar with what happens with Crime Alley. Joe chills there. He has a gun. Shoots both Bruce's parents. However, it doesn't go quite according to the original origin. Because we're talking about a different character.
Yes.
Bruce is Kal-El. Bruce is Clark, but he's called Bruce in this. And he incinerates Joe Chill with his heat vision. You know, his powers emerge out of the stress of the situation, and he burns his face off. And this is the start of the book. Like, it's only going to get darker
about,
from
like,
here.
Five pages into the book. Yeah, yeah.
And it's only going to get darker. And he suppresses this memory because he's just going the bullets. He is so emotionally disturbed as Batman is. I'd argue that Clark, or Bruce in this book, Kal-El, is more sensitive to something like this, to the PTSD of this situation. He's a more sensitive character, more open with his emotions.
And with his reactions to it, he's melted the guy's face off.
And his emotions are so much more extreme.
Yes.
And when his emotions are extreme, his powers, you know, go off the rails. But he kind of regresses and kind of forgets this event. He remembers the event, but he doesn't remember afterwards, the burning and the murder, all that sort of stuff, until he's an adult. He's, you know, he's still having issues, he's still having problems, like, and he is more disturbed than the original Bruce Wayne would ever be, because he is that sensitive. Some criminals break into the mansion, attack Alfred, and he's like, what do you think you're doing in here? You can't do this. He's like, give us all your money, Wayne. We know you're loaded. And he's like, no, you won't. He's like, we're going to shoot you. He's like, you can't shoot me. Nothing can hurt me. Flies at the guy, throws him into the fire, burns the other guy with his heat vision. And he's like, oh my God, I have this power. I remember now. I remember everything. I'm powerful. He remembers all the powers and everything that happened. And he goes downstairs because Alfred says, you know, how have I got these powers, Alfred? And Alfred goes, I know. And in the caves is where they kept the spaceship. Yeah. And while he's in there, he realizes that he can fly, he can hear things better than anyone else on the planet. He can navigate the dark, not unlike a bat.
Yes.
So he feels like that's his brethren now. So he takes flight as the Batman.
Cool costume.
With all the powers of Superman,
yeah.
Which is all the more terrifying.
Yes.
And yes. It is a cool costume. It's a full face mask.
The shield. He's got the shield, yeah. But with a bat inside.
But with the bat logo, yeah. He's got these kind of... It's very 90s.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
It's not too...
Face completely
90s.
Covered.
But yeah, it is cool, yeah, it's dark, it's scary, dark. It's foreboding. And he hires all of the Metropolis Daily Planet staff and moves them to the Gotham Gazette, I think it's called, or Gotham Times, or whatever they call it, and says, we need to start attacking the criminality, but we have to do it in this way, using the truth, while I fight, the problem. And he is... fucked up. Like, I can't say that enough in this book. He is totally fucked up.
And there are moments where he just, he's off his head.
There's a moment where he threatens to vibrate his finger so much,
yes.
And push it through a criminal's head. And he's like, yeah, I give up, And I would as well.
Yeah.
I'd probably wet myself and shit myself at the same time.
You do that a lot.
Often, very often. Yeah. And the only person who can really save him from himself is Lois Lane.
Mm.
Because he even goes back into that, the classic Clark Kent, when she's around, the bumbling Clark Kent is there, which is nice because he's supposed to be the suave playboy Bruce Wayne, but he's not.
It's well written because you've got Clark, you've got Bruce,
yeah.
You've got a bumbling Clark, you've got Superman, you've got Batman, and it's just wonderful.
It's a great
book.
Kind of, if you want a bit of both,
yes,
this is the book for you. This is world's finest.
And it answers
combined.
The question: is why won't Superman be Batman? This is why.
Yeah, you don't want him. You don't want him to be.
It wouldn't work out well.
It's like those old replacements of the 90s. Yes. You don't want Batman going that dark.
Don't
you don't
want
Azrael Superman.
Or whatever. No.
You don't want Superman as as Eradicator or the cyborg Superman. No. You don't want that because it wouldn't work. And this is exactly why. It's that age old question. But don't worry. Because you don't just get Clark and Bruce combined, Superman and Batman combined, you also get the Joker combined with Lex Luthor. So if you think he's dark, wait till you see that pairing.
Yes.
But it's a fantastic book. Again, I don't want to say too much about it. I've told you some of the moments. Won't spoil the ending. But it is phenomenal, phenomenal read, and I enjoyed it so much. It's by J.M. DeMatteis, who's one of my favourite comic book writers of all time. He really knows how to get into psychology, these characters, and the villains as well. Talked about him many times on this podcast. Just a phenomenal writer and a phenomenal story. One of the best, again, simple premise, great story.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's a really good book.
So that was Superman Speeding Bullets, not Batman Speeding Bullets, but fantastic. Really good.
The cover of the book is
Action Comics.
Action Comics.
Yeah, it's got Superman 1.
Superman 1. Yeah,
Superman 1. Just flying and kind of dipping and diving. Just so much fun. Such a good read. And again, why that idea doesn't work in practice.
Indeed.
So there you go, fanboys. The one there, Superman like Batman. Go and give that a read.
See, I don't. I want Superman being Superman.
Exactly. We want Batman being Batman.
Exactly.
So there you go. And that's what they both have equal stakes in the comic book world that we have. And again, we wouldn't have anything else if not for Superman, as he is and as he stands for what he believes in.
Very
truth, justice,
so.
The American way, all that sort of stuff. All that good
burning
stuff.
Burning face off.
Yeah, face.
Going to take your face off.
Burn. So moving on to your number two, Dennis.
My number two is my number three and number two could have gone either way.
Okay.
They're pretty much similar story. They could be sequels.
Okay.
They're not, but they could be.
Yeah.
It's Superman Monster. It's a very universal monstery type thing. It is basically, again, I'm not going to go into too much detail because I think it will ruin it because there are some plot twists in this as well. But the kind of premise is it's basically Bride of Frankenstein. It's almost beat by beat from about page 10, 12, it's Bride of Frankenstein, but with Superman. And you have the same sort of characters. You have the female. I can't remember. Is it Lois? Isn't that Lois, is it? It's Lana, isn't it?
I think it might be Lana. Yeah, I think it is Lana.
You have Lex. You have obviously kind of like the Superman Frankenstein is a bit like Bizarro.
Yeah, I was going to say it's quite very, very like Bizarro.
Yeah, it's basically the ship lands, Lex finds it, opens it up, and there's just a skeleton of a child in there. But there's the essence, there's the stuff in there.
DNA.
Yeah, which he tries. It's a bit like Man of Steel, the kind of
birthing matrix.
Birthing stuff, yeah. So he tries to put in other things, doesn't work, and eventually creates the Superman.
Hmm.
And again, it's a nature-nurture debate, you know? Do we have... Will he succumb to kind of twisted Luther kind of ways?
Mm-hmm.
Or will he... Who would be the person to kind of... become the light,
and who is the true monster?
Yes, it is. And again, you have Kent's in there as a kind like
it's like the kind of blind man, isn't it?
Yeah, from the blind man. Yeah,
so you kind of teach them how to read.
Yeah,
and you know, and morality and
exactly.
Sort of
and
stuff.
you've got kind of the ending when they're in ice.
Yeah.
So it is almost beat for beat, Bride of Frankenstein.
So I guess it kind of makes a good sequel for kind of. Castle of the Bat.
And I thought they were, but they're not.
No, two separate.
Yeah, it's a Bat. Another's the book that you've got me.
Oh yes, so the sequel, this, isn't it? Yeah, I bought Dennis a little Prezi for helping me do this podcast. I've got him a book called Batman Two Faces, which is basically Jekyll and Hyde, but he's Batman, but he's also the Joker. With a bit of Two Face in there as well, I think, thrown in for good measure.
So
it's the same creative team.
So Superman Monster is a sequel to that. It's a great book. The art isn't as whimsical. It's not as dark.
It's not as good as Castle.
Yeah, it's more crisp. It's kind of classic
comic
90s
book.
Comic books fair kind of stuff. I would have preferred it to be a bit more painted. But because I love Bride of Frankenstein, it's probably one of my favorite Universal Monsters movies.
It's not bad artwork.
No.
I just think that, you know, comparing it to Castle of the Bat, because it is a very similar premise, I would always go with Castle
and
of the Bat.
And you look at the kind of ones which, like Houdini, which are the painted ones, stuff like, they have a kind of tendency to have that kind of feel to it.
Mm.
But this one doesn't have it. But it has all the kind of nature nurture debates, you know, he's Luther's his dad, you know, your dad, why don't you love me kind of thing, why don't you want me, start stuff, or because you're a monster, this is not what I wanted, kind of, and gets thrown out, and you know, you the Kents friend him, and so that's all I'm going to say about it. And it's mega cheap on eBay as well. It's like £2 on eBay.
Is it?
Yeah, it's so cheap.
Buy it.
go and read it. It's a good book. And I say it makes a good kind of bookend with Castle of the Bat as well. So I would read them both.
Excellent. Great one. Right, so moving on to my number two. So I'm going to use the very first Elseworlds book. So the first book that ever had the imprint and the logo and the brand on it. So again, we said that Gotham by Gaslight is technically the first one, but it didn't have that brand. So I'm going to go with Batman, Holy Terror. Now, this is not to be confused with Frank Miller's Holy Terror, which we've talked about before on the controversial comics, very briefly, but we did talk about it. Do not go and read that. This is Batman Holy Terror.
Don't go and read the Frank Miller.
Just don't.
Pants.
It's not good, and it's offensive. this is by Alan Brennett, with art by Norm Brayfogle. Sorry, I forgot to say who the artist was on Speed and Bullets. Eduardo Barreto. Great name. So this is Alan Brennett and Norm Brayfogle, the late Norm Brayfogle, who's one of my favourite Batman artists of all time. Very 90s, very expressive, very dark and brooding. So this Elseworlds is basically, so I'll read this sort of synopsis for it here. So in 1658, the Lord Protector Oliver Cromwell manages to recover from his bout of malaria fever and strengthens his hold on England. This causes England to enter modern day as a corrupt Puritan theocracy, encompassing not only the British Isles, but most of the American continent, including Gotham City, or as it is now known, Gotham Town. So we're looking, it's set in modern day, but we still have this religious-based government that kind of is run in a corrupt fashion. And it looks like they've all got the wigs, all the buildings are very stylized and in that way, in that kind of look of that kind of 16th century time. We've not moved on that much in terms of kind of architecture and fashion. It looks very similar. And Bruce Wayne is Like, very, very different from the last Bruce Wayne we were talking about. This guy's kind of past it. His parents died. They were killed by people who they felt were, you know, betraying the kind of government, not going along with the stipulations and considered sinners and things like that against the rule. But he's got past it. He's used God and he's used his religion to help him move past his grief and carry on. He's giving up Wayne Manor. He's giving up his fortune to become a man of the cloth, a priest Batman, a vicar Batman, a reverend Batman of this thing. However, he gets a visit by James Gordon, who tells him that his parents were actually secretly going against the government and helping deplorables and lesser known people or sinners and helping them through various kind of medical issues. Like there was things like there's like re-education camps and kind of like pray the gay away camps, those sort of things. And there's been like torture and there's people with mutilated, you know, there's people that have mutilated their own genitals. There's a woman who drinks bleach to have, to cause an abortion, to cause her to miscarry, because this baby is out of wedlock. People are treated horrifically. Like just think of any like heavily religious country where they have no money, they have no resources, there's no real aid. Like it is awful. It's horrific. Is very dark, dark subject matter. And Batman realizes that this was actually, and James Gordon, like, he's ready to kind of like forget God, throw it away. He doesn't exist. He couldn't possibly let this happen to me or anybody else in this city. All the stuff that you've just talked about, all the stuff that I've uncovered, this can't possibly be happening. And James goes, no, it wasn't done by God. God's fault. It was people who thought they were God. So Batman, Bruce Wayne, now clothes himself in a demon costume his father wore in a passion play and takes his justice and finds his justice while working from the inside as a priest, as a man of the cloth. He fights this corrupt world. And I love this. I love that it switches Batman from, you know, there's a lot of people go out like Batman could help everyone by giving more money out and not beating up the mentally ill in the street and the desperate. You know, people are like, you know, he could actually help more as Bruce Wayne than Batman. So I like that it spins this and he's moving upwards instead of like going down and looking for the, you know, that sort of those kind of characters. It's the corrupt government that he's fighting, he's rebelling against. It's very much a little, there's a little bit of, I won't go too much into kind of spoiler territory, but there's a bit of a kind of flashpoint elements to this. Like a lot of this stuff I go, well, this is a bit like Flashpoint. Oh, this is a bit like Flashpoint. That's a bit like Flashpoint. And he also finds this kind of prison of metahumans that have always, they've been experimented on and used and abused. And, you know, there's Aquaman's there and he's just like in a fetal position, but underwater. Like his mind is gone and there's all these other people that are trapped and he's trying to help them. And it's just a fantastic read. And I think it's one of the best Batman costumes ever.
Oh yeah, by far. I think it's brilliant.
It's a gorgeous costume. And what's great as well is because it has almost like a whole, the Batman logo is kind of more of a holy symbol. And there's a white line that kind of comes up to the collar. And what's great is he can wear his kind of priest robes and stuff over that. And it still looks like he's got his priest collar on, even though that's part of his costume, which I love. I think you've read it, haven't you, Dennis?
I think it's brilliant. I read it years and years ago. So good. I think I've got about 3 copies of it.
That's how good it is.
Well, I keep losing it. I've got it because I love it. I rebuy it.
Read
again.
It again. Yeah. Yeah.
And I agree with it. The cover's amazing. The cover's really good.
Gorgeous.
As well.
Painted cover.
Yeah, beautiful cover. And the story's amazing. Mm. It's really, really good.
It's a fun read. And I also think that the ending is fairly open-ended.
Yes.
I think there's a lot of stories you could tell.
Very much so, yeah, yeah.
Within that universe. Not a lot of these Elseworlds stories end like that. But I think this is a universe that is ripe for revisiting. So
I concur.
Mm. Excellent.
We're agreeing a lot tonight.
Yeah. It's not like us. Mm. It's not like us. You're wrong, Dennis. You're wrong.
Your books are rubbish.
Yours are rubbish. Yes, so that was my number 2. So I guess this is your number 1.
Yes.
Okay, so let's have your very best one.
Batman Red Rain. It's the first of the Batman vampire trilogy.
Does it have Draculas in it?
It has Draculas in it.
Lots of Draculas.
Lots and lots of Draculas.
Okay.
I love that this is the first Elseworlds book I've read. Purposely gone out and got the first printings. I absolutely adore it. I've got the gallery editions. I've got sketches from Kelly Jones. And I love Kelly Jones's Batman. Not everybody does. Because it's got like long fingers and he's got his cape's a bit funny, but
muscles.
Yeah, I always think that Batman, you should be scared of him. If this Batman dropped down in front of me, I would fill my pants because he's terrifying. The premise is very straightforward. There were vampires invading Gotham. Batman's ill-equipped to fight these vampires, because obviously they're stronger than him, drinking blood. It's a proper horror book.
Oh, God, yeah.
There's gore in it. There's people's throats being ripped out in beautiful technicolor. And, you know, Kelly Jones's artwork, there's a bit where he shows a vampire bite a guy's throat completely, dragging it, pulls skin's out. Pulling out. Oh, it's got... so good.
Oh, good stuff.
Oh, I love it. So Batman's equipped to kind of go against these Draculas.
Yeah,
these vampires.
All the Draculas.
So he makes a decision. He makes a decision that he will need to be more of a vampire, more have the strength and stuff. It doesn't quite work out for him, bless him. Bless his little cotton.
Wants
socks.
To kind of level the playing field, doesn't
he? Yeah. But what happens is it does level the playing field, but he also becomes a vampire. He has wings. He has his cape over his wings, which looks amazing. It's really good. And there is a scene where he kind of gets undressed in front of Alfred and goes, bing!
Yeah.
Look what I've got.
These are great.
He's like...
You need a pair of these.
Yeah. But he says, a bit of a gift. Got here, whatever. But he also... He needs blood. And the kind of... As the book goes on, his quest for blood, his thirst is getting more and more and more. He goes and speaks to people. Can I be a vampire without blood? No. You need blood.
Yeah, definitely.
Shit. And over the three books, I'm not going to go into the other two books.
No.
Because this is for me the benchmark of Elseworlds books. This and another one I'll mention in honorable mentions later. But this is the benchmark for Elseworlds books for me. It's taking that character. Everyone's always said he has been a vampire in canon. Mm-hmm. He's been a vampire in Detective Comics. And he's been a vampire in the Batman comics. But for me, the fact that it's a proper horror book, the illustrations horror, Kelly Jones is awesome at drawing this sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. The story, and it's written in a very Marvel way.
Okay.
It was, Doug would write bits of stuff on a piece of paper, send it over to Kelly. Kelly would draw it. It would come back. Then they would add the text.
Yeah.
So they did it in a very Marvel way.
Yeah.
And it flows beautifully. I'm not going to tell you how it ends. It's three books.
Yeah.
This one's the strongest. So there's this one,
Bloodstorm
and Crimson Mist.
Yep.
You get the feeling that Crimson Mist, they're not sure to end it, but never mind.
Yep.
This is if you want to start reading
Elseworlds
books, this one, Holy Terror, that kind of stuff, those and Speeding Bullets, they are the benchmarks. Early on, this was like 96 or something, 95.
Yeah.
Very early on in the kind of Elseworlds imprint, but it's awesome.
It is good.
It's a proper horror book. Yeah. DC have always done horror well.
And this is what I mean, like with the films, I hope that they go that extra mile and they try these extreme ideas. Because I like when creators take a risk and they go for something and they're like, we're just going to do this. And I want to see that in the movies.
And you do get, you've got the Joker in there.
Yeah.
You've got Catwoman. Bit more of a cat than a woman.
Yeah, sure.
But you've got the classic... Yeah. Characters
James
there.
Gordon's there.
Yeah, they're all there, and Alfred doesn't really know what to do with Bruce. He wants to support him, but concerned the fact that
he's a creature of the night.
He's literally become a creature of the night.
He's a blood sucking vampire,
and he does need blood. Mm. He does need the stuff there. And there's a really good scene where he's fighting. He really wants to.
I think when I was reading it, I expected him to be like. To become a vampire and then instantly evil. Ah, I'm a vampire. Ah, I'm evil straight away. But it really isn't that.
No,
it's a gradual, constantly questioning the morality of what he's doing, when he's doing. You know, he's killing these vampires. Is that not killing like a person?
Yes.
You know, if he does drink blood, is he then truly evil? Has he gone too far at that point? Can he still be Batman and not be a vampire? You know, and again, Robert Pattinson. He was a vampire. Now he's a bat. The worlds collide.
He wasn't really a vampire. He was a chandelier.
Diamantes. It's got all the Diamantes.
But it reminds me a little bit like Venom as well. Mm. You know, the kind of the battle of where you draw the line.
Yeah.
And he knows almost immediately he's crossed the line.
Yeah.
He knows that there's no turning back. And you know,
am I a man? Am I a monster?
Alfred's front and center in a lot of this as well. Alfred's you as you're reading the book. Yeah. Alfred is asking the question that you would ask and think, is that the right thing to, like you just said? Mm. And it plays out in three books, but you can read Red Rain on complete because it does have an ending.
Yeah.
It ends.
Yeah.
So you can read Red Rain completely on its own and not have to read the other two books.
Or even you could even read the first two and leave it there as well because it does have a definite ending.
Yeah.
I think they probably someone went, oh, we like them Dracula books.
They're really popular.
Yeah.
They're really popular.
And I can see why because
the graphic, you know, that you say in the collection is number one selling one, the Red Rain one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the first print's like 35 quid now. They're there really hard to get hold of.
There you go.
But it is, for me, there's that one and one more of the book to me is My Elseworlds. That's because that's what I read and I fell in love with Elseworlds because of this.
There you go. Right, well, I guess it's time for my number one. So this is going to be a bit out of left field for you, Dennis.
Go on then, bit left field.
A bit of left field. Justice Society of America, The Golden Age. So if you're familiar with Stargirl, they're kind of introducing at the moment the live-action version of the Justice Society of America. Black Adam movie's going to have the Justice Society in as well. They were the precursor to the Justice League. Without the Justice Society, you would not have the Justice League. So that is the importance of those characters. So this book, for me, there's a lot of books that are responsible for the deconstruction of superheroes and the superhero genre. For example, Watchmen is the most famous.
Yes.
Like, it brought superheroes down with relatable problems, real-world issues, and put it under the kind of microscope. I think there is a Marvel book called Squadron Supreme by Mark Gruenwald, which does a very similar thing. It's not as good as Watchmen. It's not as heralded as Watchmen, but it is still very, very good. And again, the Squadron Supreme are basically DC's Justice League, but in the Marvel universe or within the Marvel kind of imprint. And, you know, you've got Hyperion is Superman. Warrior Woman is Wonder Woman. Nighthawk is Batman, and so on and so on. And it's a really good book, so I highly recommend that if you're looking for something. But there is also a third book, and it is this book, JSA, The Golden Age. So this is written by James Robinson. If you're familiar with him, he loves his Golden Age stuff. He loves his World War II characters. He loves anything like that. Invaders, he loves. You know, all those kind of characters. Starman, he did the original 90s Starman and it's got a lot of that JSA. Even the JSA book, the modern JSA book from the late 90s into the 2000s, he started that book because of his love for these characters. Now, this is an Elseworlds tale, so it's not in continuity. But some of the elements he introduces in this, he carried over into the main continuity somewhat. So, for example, this is set kind of just post-war. So the war has ended. The need for superheroes is gone. End of. War's over. Superheroes are in the decline. So their marriages are failing. Johnny Quick and Liberty Bell's marriage failed. There is the Tarantula, who became a superhero just to write his great American novel. He's in a dark depression. He's got writer's block. He's drinking. He's an alcoholic. Hourman is trying to find a new, he's losing his powers, tries to find the new Hourman pill so that he can have his super strength for another hour. But he finds out he's addicted to risking his life and being a superhero. Robot Man, the original Robot Man, is slowly but surely losing his humanity and touch with humanity because he can't feel or experience any human aspect of a human life. The Green Lantern is being accused of un-American activities and is brought before court because he runs a newspaper and there are various kind of people that are being accused of being communist. Now, all the while this is happening, all these kind of superheroes in decline, they're not really, you know, but everyone's trying to hold on to that post, that pre-war, you know, ongoing war life, because sadly, that was the best time of their life. The wartime was the best time of their life, and they are finding it hard to reconcile the difference, and it's not the same, and their life is not what it should have been. And they're not heralded as heroes because they were masked heroes. It was a secret, you know, and and it's changed dramatically. Now, there's a lesser character called Mr. America, the Americamando, who has come back and is heralded as this hero because he was behind enemy lines in secret, killing all the Nazi generals and the high-ranking Nazis. There's a character called Parseval, I think it was called, who's the reason that the JSA couldn't go into Berlin because he takes away all their powers. He would nullify all the Subira's powers. There was an attack where they went and they were like, we can't do this. We've almost died. None of us have our powers. You know, Jay Garrick, the Flash, doesn't have his powers. Hawkman loses his powers, all that sort of stuff. And he comes back, he's killed Hitler, he's killed all these people, and he starts kind of, everyone loves him. Like, he is the hero. He killed Hitler. You know, hooray, hooray, hooray. And slowly but surely, he amasses political power. Public sentiment is behind him. And he says that we need a new superhero for this atomic age that's coming up. We need to find and kind of make them for this communist war that's coming. For the Cold War, we need superheroes that will solve everything. So he hires various different kind of superheroes that we know. But slowly but surely, we find out that there is another conspiracy against the superheroes, and somebody is doing something from behind closed doors to kind of turn things against the superheroes. And the line is drawn in the sand. You either join us or you don't. You're either part of the government and you're under our control, or you're not. And that is it. And they're trying to make the world a better place, but all the while there's all this sort of dark, disturbing stuff going on. The 40s and the 50s were still pretty disturbing, even though we were trying to have this nice, like, look how we've changed, look at the world now, we're out of wartime, but it's still some dark and disturbing kind of imagery in it. Again, I don't want to give away the ending because I know you haven't read it. You'd really like it. And it's almost not an Elseworlds, but certain events and things happen to certain characters which make it an Elseworlds style. But I won't go into it. But for example, as well, like, you've got Starman in there, who actually gave his technology to Einstein and has made the atomic bomb with that technology. He is responsible. So he goes all like Robert Oppenheimer and just is in a mental institution, can't, you know, resolve those differences. And it's just great. It's just fantastic. And again, it brings these kind of mythical heroes down to our level, and they're understandable, and their issues are relatable, and their problems are relatable on such a real kind of dark and depressing way, but it's so believable. It, you know, again, like, when these comics were written, they were like, yes, hopeful, da 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 da. But again, the dark side of war was beneath the veneer of these stories, but from the writers, and the real world was experiencing stuff. So it kind of, it marries those two worlds, those kind of amazing, kind of brilliant, raw kind of storytelling of that time, that unbridled creativity of that time, the golden age. They call it the golden age for a reason. They call it the golden age of comics for a reason, because it was just everywhere. It was a huge kind of sensation at the time, like the movies are now in a way. Like, this is the golden age of comic book movies in a way. That was the golden age of comics. And it kind of, it bridges those two worlds together. And the Manhunter character, who, he knows what the conspiracy is, but he's forgotten it. He's got, like, he's PTSD, got all these kind of characters going on with their own issues. And that's more interesting than there's not that much action in it.
No.
But when you get to the end, there is a massive finale with every single superhero at the time in, like, on, like, Capitol Hill or the Washington Monument, you know, that whole kind of Washington DC area. And it's a huge battle, and it's a devastating battle. It is like a war has gone on. And again, I won't reveal the kind of the villains of the piece, because I read it again and I kind of forgot, and the surprise was nice that I kind of forgot. And I was like, oh yeah, of course, yes! And it is fantastic. But again, it's a lot like JLA The Nail. There's a lot of disturbing kind of political manoeuvring, conspiracies, and, you know, racism and all that sort of stuff going on. But it's great. And Paul Smith, who did work on the X-Men, he does it in a very kind of pulpy style. That's not his usual style of his art. But it works, and it brings you in, and it makes it more like, yes, I do feel like I'm in the 40s and the 50s. And the 30s, and it does use, like, real world, you know, implications to talk about, like, the atom bomb, things like that. So it bridges that gap between the real world and the comic book world so very well that you just believe it's there. And couldn't recommend it enough. And if you're into the JSA or you're interested in the JSA, again, this is an Elseworlds tale, so it's very much a one-off, but it's definitely worth reading if you're interested in any of those kind of characters. It's fantastic, and that's why I put it as my number one.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Super. Smashing.
Super. Superb.
No, it sounds good.
It's really good.
I like the JSA anyway.
Yeah, I think the JSA, I like the
underrated
kind of,
as well.
Yeah, a little underrated. I like them at All-Star Squadron, Seven Soldiers of Victory, you know, all those kind of characters. There's something about the Golden Age of comics and those kind of wartime characters, you know. I talked about the Human Torch in one of the previous podcasts, the Jim Hammond Human Torch. I do have a, like, there's something about that kind of wartime.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Like, my granddad, like, he sold Militaria, so that was always an interesting part of like growing up and seeing what he had and what he sold, and would tell me the stories, him growing up in the Blitz and stuff. I've always found that part of history fascinating. And lots of people still do, you know, older people than us and younger people than us. It's a fascinating bit of history, you know, for all the good and bad things that went on and that needed to happen, that, you know, it's great. And I think this is one of the best kind of books of that era, of that kind of showcasing that era, but highly, highly recommend it. So
fantastic.
So get on that. So
I shall.
So I think we've covered it. Coming to the end very shortly. So very quickly, Dennis, do you have any honourable mentions? Ones you haven't included in your five?
Kingdom Come.
Yes, absolutely.
Kingdom Come is probably one of my favourite all-time books of all time. Matt Wade, it's Height of His Powers.
Yeah.
It's a morality tale. It's what happens when Superman loses everything, goes away. 90s superheroes come back, and the line between good and bad are kind of fading. Mm. We don't know who our heroes are anymore.
Yeah.
Who the villains are. This and the other.
Superman doesn't have a place in the world.
No, but he does, as we've said many times on many different podcasts, including say, and he basically gets the band back together and shows these young upstarts this is what it means to be a hero.
Yeah. And it
very much comes out of all this kind of anti-hero bullshit of the 90s, all these kind of massive machine gun wielding.
Yeah, pouches.
Yeah. And
I mean, one of the kind of villains, the antagonist in the story is based on Cable.
Yeah.
Because that was kind of what was popular at the time.
As I said before, that one and Red Rain for me is Elseworlds.
I think that's good. Kingdom Come, we've mentioned. Gotham by Gaslight. Superman Red Sun.
Red Sun, yeah.
Is a big one for me. I think it's fantastic. It's very different from the animated movie, especially the ending.
Yes.
But I think the ending works. The comic book ending is a very comic book ending, very comic booky ending, but I like it. And I think the ending for the animated movie works better for that self-contained story. But I really love Red Sun, and I think a lot of people will bring that up as well. So I'm going to mention a few as well very quickly. JSA again, Liberty Files, very, very close to being on the list again. Set during World War II, it's got Batman and members of the JSA as kind of spies. Post-war and during the war. It has a load of other kind of comic book characters. Again, not going to spoil it because it is just excellent.
And I'm about to read it.
Yeah, big battles, amazing stuff. I think you'll really like it. Great artwork. Justice Riders, the Justice League as Western heroes. Wonder Woman's leading against Maxwell Lord, who's destroyed her town. She's the Sheriff of Paradise. Fantastic. You've got Hawkman as Native American, which works amazingly well. You've got Kid Flash as a kind of Billy the Kid figure, like a quick draw. Amazing, brilliant, fun book. So in 1994, they did annuals that were all different Elseworlds tales. So I've chosen for one of them was the Steel annual. So Steel is a kind of somewhere between Superman and kind of Iron Man, somewhere in between. And this tale puts him in a, he's a, on the slave, he's in, as a slave on a plantation. And then just before the Civil War, he breaks loose and saves his entire family and all the other slaves on that plantation. It's a really, really strong book, very dark, very disturbing. It's like 12 Years a Slave meets DC Comics sort of thing. But very, very good. Divided Nation, Superman Divided Nation.
That was almost my list, Divided Nation.
Superman as a Union soldier in the Civil War. Fantastic book. Highly recommend. Great message as well.
All the battles are real battles.
Based on real battles?
Yeah, everything. When you get to the end of the book, it tells you the kind of the history, what the writer read to write that book.
Amazing.
So it's apart from Superman, it's all fact.
Yeah. Batman Gotham Noir, it's an Ed Brubaker tale. It's a noir tale. Jim Gordon's an alcoholic private detective, blah, blah, blah. It's good. I won't go into it too much because it will spoil it. Elseworlds, Batgirl and Supergirl. It's just like if Batman and Superman didn't happen, they take the kind of main spots. So yes, a few listener comments before we go as well, because we're running very close to time. So Dan Keatis, or DL Keatis, at DL Keatis on Twitter said, the Batman-Dracula crossover, so Red Rain, Bloodstorm, Crimson Mist, it says that crossover is a standout for me, as is Superman Red Sun, but my favourite has to be Kingdom Come. And I Am Jack's Musings, my biggest fan, at I Am Jack's Musings on Twitter. He said, Red Sun, obviously. Does Batman versus Predator count? Not technically in this, but it's a cool little alternate crossover universe thing.
We discussed that last night, didn't we?
We did. Yes. Discussed it in a big, we were like, what can we include? Can we like include that? No, we're not going to include that. But it's a great book, and I've talked about it before as well. It's an amazing, amazing read. Paul Meller, so that's at the Meller Geek, your friend and mine. He says, love Gotham by Gaslight and Red Rain and Crimson Mist.
There you go.
Great ones. So, guys, you can find me and the podcast at Secret Boars, and Twitter's at Dan_Boars, Instagram Spider-Dan Secret Boars. It's available on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube, many, many more. If you'd like to donate towards the podcast, you can buy me a coffee at ko-fi.com / Spider-Dan and Secret Boars. And when you interact with us, don't forget to use the hashtag Prepare for Prattle. I've been Dan.
I've been Dan.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.